guy called Steve Quayle was an amazing retailer in my view. Whoever's on shifts first thing in the morning, he would go and walk the whole team out to the other side of the road where the store was, and we would walk in like a snake, and we would walk and basically snake the whole store looking for things that were wrong, untidy, missing point of sale, undressed shelves. So it's just that kind of, you know, walking the store. I think often people just live in the kind of e-commerce CMS in the background and actually never shop their stores.
Welcome to Statements of Intent. In this 20-minute episode, we're addressing how e-commerce has lost sight of the people at its very heart. You, the customer. It's a chat that's optimistic, it's casual, it's probably slightly ranty in places, but that's okay. But it's a place where I talk to senior e-commerce marketers and share their statement of how they're looking to change the status quo of e-commerce, adding more care, being more considerate to those very people that they're selling to, the customer. I'm your host, David Mannheim, the founder of Made of Intent, and we're going to jump right into it. Have fun. I'm not even going to introduce you, Richard. We were talking pre-podcast. We are now recording, but we're not going to edit this bit out. So I will introduce you, but carry on what it is that you're about saying. You've just been in a meeting and you came out and...
We said, thinking about acting like a retailer is my statement of intent. And you and I were quickly chatting about, you know, maybe the future of retail and how consumers are going to get the inspiration and find those things they want to purchase and where they're going to buy them from. But and perhaps I'll do some of the introduction for you, David, is that I started my retail career in the mid 90s working on the shop floor at Sainsbury's Homebase. So when Sainsbury's owned it, and having the grounding in, really good physical retailing in terms of visual merchandising, you know, customer flow through the aisles, upsell, delivering a promise you make, all those good things is really, really key. And then transitioning my career into starting my first pure play D2C e-commerce marketing job was at a business called play.com in 2004. So I was head of marketing there, 20 million turnover. And you know, I was there and we grew to 500 million in 3 years, just over 3 years. So bananas grow. But suddenly you go from a 3D, you know, fully immersive environment as a consumer, or thinking about that as a merchandiser, a visual merchandiser, to a two-dimensional one, and having to try and sell, you know, millions of books, CDs, DVDs, Blu-rays, video games is quite a different challenge, right? So that's I'll stop there and you can guide me a bit more.
One-way communication as well, right? Like at least in a physical environment, you get two-way communication. You can ask for some support, or, you know, sometimes some support comes over to you in the form of physical human, a shop assistant.
Yeah.
But moving from a two-way communication to a one-way communication set.
Yeah, it's one-way communication. And one of the things, I did a piece of work for Unilever a few years back where they said, could you write us a sort of a 101 e-commerce for dummies to some degree? And that sort of downplays it a little bit for their sort of global e-com team. And I sort of used that sort of retail analogy to think about, you know, try and sort of every day, you know, like the to-do list, basically today's to-do list, if you're a sort of a trading manager or a retail manager of an e-com store, would just put different persona on every day. So I'm a new customer thinking about this thing, I'm inspired. So maybe I'm not in full high intent shopping mode. I'm just inspiration. Never, you know, don't know your brand. How do we, in that one-way communication style from the retail, are you doing a good enough job of putting over that content and explaining the features and benefits to a prospect? And then, you know, next day swap over and think, right, I'm maybe a high frequency, quite loyal, customer. Does the actually shopping experience do and delight them still, right? Or are you still very much set up for new customers? It's really interesting often when we get, I've been asked in my career to critique kind of, you know, the look and feel or designs of new websites, particularly retail ones. And maybe the majority of their traffic is new, and they'll put the, you know, back in the day, this one 10 years ago, you know, before Shopify came and sort of standardized a lot of things, for brands, but they'd put like, you know, the login button would be the first thing you'd see at the checkout. And you're like, actually most of your customers haven't even got an account. So what, you know, why is that the button that you see first? Yeah. Just putting those different, I suppose, persona hats on and actually mystery shopping the site. Trying to get your head into, right, I'm here to buy a gift. I'm here as a new customer. I'm here as a repeat customer. And think about that.
Is your mindset one of trying to translate from the physical environment to the virtual? Let me ask you, let me phrase the question a little bit differently. So you move from continuing the Richard Chappell career path. You moved from Play.com. Did you then go to THG Ingenuity?
Yeah, I went to THG. Yeah. So I was head of e-com there for all of the brands. And actually, when I joined that business, it was still just only the Hut.com. And we were powering white label entertainment retail sites for Tesco, Asda, and a few others.
Great.
And then during my tenure there, THG received some institutional investment. And we were able then to go and acquire MyProtein and look fantastic and start building our own. First party brands that we acquired in sort of nutrition and beauty space. And then at that point, when we actually acquired those brands, I moved into, a VP or the founder of Ingenuity, which was then us sort of selling the whole end to end THG stack to the likes of actually Unilever, where I met them, Nintendo, Elizabeth Arden, and other brands were using it. So I was exposed much more to the back end of retail businesses on e-commerce. That I've spent all my time, 10 years or so, in demand creation front end.
Sure.
But then I had to worry about, making promises to the likes of Nintendo around our operations and our technology and our finance and all those other things. So I was a much more rounded general manager of an e-commerce business then.
Yeah.
And then there till 2015, then when consulting, met Jim Shark at 8 million and ended up as their CMO for a couple of years.
That's cool.
So yeah, that was a good journey. And now, founder of the Growth Foundation. We've been going for 3 years, team of nearly 30 people showing scale-up brands and investors in this space of how to grow the right way. We talk about that being profitable, sustainable, manageable, and enjoyable. So that's what we do.
All the apples. I love it.
Yeah.
Just like going back to the THG and the Gymshark world. So you've got to think there that those brands predominantly, especially Gymshark, didn't have a physical environment.
Yeah.
So their e-com pure play businesses. So
correct.
How do you find there to be a bias with that? Or how do you bring that physical human interaction into those pure play businesses? Like the entrenched way of thinking.
Yeah, I suppose it's thinking about when I talk about think about physical retail, it's trying to where we could try and create almost like a pseudo two-way conversation, but you can't have that conversation, as you say. But actually, it's thinking about, and testing things like, arriving on home pages and saying, almost like signposting as you would do in a physical store where you walk in and go, right, the bread's over there and, the milk's over there. You point people where you need to go. So great navigation. So instead of perhaps, we would test things like, said more graphics and kind of getting people to shop straight from the homepage. It would be, are you a new customer? Come down this path. If you're a returning customer, come here. We'll just, it's things like that where you try and think about the navigation and help people on their journey. And then the other thing I suppose thinking about is the, my brain's gone a bit of a brain fart. It is the,
yeah, on a Friday, we'll forgive
you. Yeah. I suppose the way that you communicate as a retail brand to a consumer at what stage is the better word of the path to purchase you're at. So one of the things I've experienced is that maybe this isn't perhaps as obvious in a big department store or a big physical store like a Homebase or something like that, but more of a boutique is that first entry point when you perhaps spy, here's a new customer I've never seen before. So imagine you put your head of, right, I'm a small, let's say, boutique shoe shop, and you're there, and you're fortunate because you work there every day, your returning customers and your new ones, so you can spot them and identify them quickly. You can, I suppose, also as a human, you start to make some perhaps either stereotypes or some judgments about how they look, where they've come from. Maybe you could see the car they've turned up in from the car park. You make a judgment around them. But in those initial conversations that you have and those early moments are around amplifying and expressing perhaps the features and benefits of the product or service that you're selling. So, trying to excite them about the benefits they're going to get. And also in a way that you're thinking, how do I meet and I suppose connect with that consumer, both on sort of their rational and conscious needs, but also the subconscious ones and more emotional ones as well. So Gymshark's a good example of knowing that, that brand kind of stood for making people really feel in control, but also look great while they were training in the gym. So we used to do a lot of that yoga, effectively showing imagery and content around how fabulous your arms or shoulders or bum is going to look in our products. But as you then move to a more of the sort of the checkout and the back end of the store, which obviously happens in e-commerce and in physical retail. Typically, we start to think about communicating anxiety suppression messages. So, you know, trying to pacify thoughts around why you shouldn't buy it. You know, you start to think, oh, should I buy this today? Am I going to get that buyer's remorse and regret this decision? Or actually, am I nervous that, you know, it's going to fit me okay? And all those things, that's much more rational anxiety comes in, you know, to a consumer towards the end of that purchase. So think about, how do you suppress that? It's more that kind of great salespeople or in physical stores have got, can I suppose, tailor their conversation based on that knowledge of where the consumer is in their store or how they're feeling. And it's trying to take some of that into e-com.
It feels very easy. It feels much easier to do in the physical world, because you're looking at someone and you have the conscious and the subconscious cues. You know, you can ask them explicit questions or you can get implicit feedback.
Yeah.
But you can't do that. Like, how? No. And it feels, forgive me for like putting my flagpole in the ground, it feels as though we've genericized the world of e-commerce, where everything is templatized or homogenized, all the eyes.
Yeah, completely.
In the world. I mean, like, how do you get out of that mindset? Or do we even...
So I think there are some things, the way you can play perhaps a Pareto's principle, where certain areas of your e-com store are kind of like homogenized or generic and have to be to some degree for every user. And obviously, as you closer you get to the cart, that it potentially gets a little bit more of the ability to serve personalized content gets a bit more difficult. An example, like for apparel brands that we've worked on, typically this test works really well. So if you've got something like a chat widget, you might see in the bottom corner of the store, and say, you know, and sometimes it either pops up after a few seconds, or if you click on it and say, hey, how can I help you? We would change that generic message, which comes out of the box, to something like, hey, how can I help you? ... 94% of our customers say our sizing is brilliant. Are you already thinking that we know that a lot of questions we get in the chat are about sizing. So why don't we just again pacify that anxiety around sizing by saying 94% of our customers say our sizing is incredible, or whatever. So that can be a generic message that everyone benefits from. We've worked with an amazing partner of ours, actually. He's got a business called Shopbox.ai. They're an AI-driven, almost like that sales associate that looks at other, the way that you navigate the site, either with your finger and thumb, the speed you swipe on a mobile, or when you're hovering your mouse and what you're looking at, and starts to act a bit more like a human sales associate to say, actually, I know you're here and you're motivated. Let's say in footwear, it might be that you're into just black, ugly trainers. So I can, through the AI, just give you more black, ugly trainers to look at versus you've come in, let's say you might have clicked on we've come in via a, let's say, Adidas black trainer search term on paid search, you dropped into that product page. Let the AI start to take some signals there, sort of less people who bought this product also bought, which is sort of the traditional way of serving, you know, complementary products or basket building with those kind of things. So it's a combination of using, I suppose, if there's generic templates you have to use with, what could you do to think like a salesperson would do in terms of that, an opportunity to connect and, you know, communicate. What could I say that would either amplify the feature and benefit at this stage or suppress anxiety? Sometimes you want to test both of those. Or are there some tools that you can use, you know, like from the likes of Nosto or Shopbox or others that allow you to sort of personalize that based on previous buying behavior and activity in real time? That's really quick key as well.
Or just for reference, made of intent. Not to like put again our flagpole in the ground, but we focus very much on the intent of the audience, right?
Yeah.
The signals that you're giving off help us. We can contextualize those signals as something really meaningful. Whether you have a high level of intent, whether you are indeed ready to buy, whether you are
exactly
indeed browsing. It feels to me like a lot of the tools and more so the thinking out there is focused. I'm going to push you a bit on this, if that's okay, Richard.
Yeah.
I focus on product affinity. It's focused on helping you find right items. So discovery of product. I don't know about you, that feels to me like it's one quarter of the sell. When you're selling to an individual, helping you find something feels myopic in the grand scheme of things. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It's like the other complexity to this is that it will be linked directly to perhaps the, I suppose, the positioning of the brand, be it, let's say, a low order value, high decision, I suppose, size and weight of decision commercially on you as a consumer?
Like an impulse
premium. Yeah, that's the word, yeah. Or is it a sort of a premium luxury product? And the other thing, is it a, maybe not linked to expense too much, but is it something where it has a massive impact on your life or your environment post the purchase? So, you know, we've done some work with, you know, sofa brands and floor covering brands where the sales cycle and the inspiration to purchase can be 8 to 12 weeks or even longer. So, you know, if you've got someone who's coming in, a good example, we've worked with some amazing work with Snug Sofa, amazing sofa brands, modular sofa, where, you know, basically you can get a sofa in a box, right? And what was really interesting, again, sort of taking new visitors down a sample journey versus a buy now journey, had a much greater overall conversion rate by knowing, hey, this is the first person, first visit. Don't they buy now? They're most likely in inspiration mode. So let's talk about, you know, again, the features and benefits of why a modular sofa is so good. Let's get the sample to them. Let's do all that. And then from that point, using CRM, get them back into buy mode, right? But you're absolutely right. And of course, the other point as well is that sometimes, so what's interesting around products, but I was thinking more of the brand thing. If I think about sort of apparel, you know, typically apparel is usually sort of, you know, the uniform we wear to say something about us, right? So there's other things that products do for us as consumers, you know, the emotional and rational problems that products solve for us. And some of them are very emotional, irrational, and, you know, about status, and others are much more functional and rational, aren't they, and conscious and things like that. So yeah, it really depends. And I suppose brands are onus to understand where they are on that matrix is interesting in terms of, again, what they say and when they say it.
Sorry, I'm listening, but at the same time, I'm hearing my 3-year-old child outside the door say he wants.
Don't worry.
I can hear him doing this over.
I've got my team in the meeting room next door, and I can overhear them slightly, so again, hopefully it's not picking up.
It's fascinating. It's like we've talked about almost the benefits of acting like a physical retailer, or like them being in the mindset of, yeah, you are a physical retailer, we do these certain things, and we should translate that over to the online world. What prevents people from thinking in that way, or what are the barriers to the practicalities of that type of approach?
I think the one that jumps out most obviously is that you typically, perhaps if you're a, you know, either a small business and maybe a founder that's wearing every hat from, you know, setting up the Shopify store to, you know, picking and packing from the kitchen table. Or if you're a bigger business with a team that, you know, that's already managing that in all different teams across your business, you're only ever, unless you're probably picking and packing the product yourself, you're never in a physical environment. You're in a virtual one looking at, you know, one or two screens. And I was just thinking then, you know, the ability, one of the things, again, my store manager back at my homeless days, a guy called Steve Crowell, was an amazing retailer in my view. He used to take myself or every day, whoever's on shift first thing in the morning, he would go and walk the whole team out to the other side of the road where the store was, and we would walk in like a snake, and we would walk and basically snake the whole store looking for things that were wrong, untidy, missing point of sale, undressed shelves, you know, in the paint aisle, which I was responsible for at the time. You know, if I had, you know, the white emulsion and there was a strip next to that without brushes on it, you know, that would be a very highly, well, quite a large reprimand from my manager on those things. So it's just that kind of, you know, walking the store, you know, and that I think often people just live in the kind of e-commerce CMS in the background and actually never shop their stores. I mean, it's amazing the amount of people, like a couple of questions I ask when I meet new brands is like, when was the last time we actually did a transaction on the site properly? When did you last shop? It's amazing. That can be sometimes weeks or months before members of the team have actually tried to buy things on their in their own shop.
That's great. Service, I can imagine.
Yeah, right? Yeah. They're also asking, like, do you tell me the name of your top five customers by name and where they live? Again, most people will go, probably one in five can do that when I meet them. Some founders or managers are really onto who their best customers are. You know, and again, in physical retail, you would know who your top customers are. You know what cars they drive, and what things they're into, what they're not, because you have a conversation with them, because they're so frequent and so visible. So yeah, that it just is this sort of almost like sort of two-dimensional screen barrier that sets up this block for me. And then the next one will be obviously the capability of having, as you say, or the lack of capability to have two-way conversation, the ease to create the volume and quality of content to have different conversations with different consumers based on where they are in their buying journey. But I'm pretty bullish around how, I suppose, the support with AI and other things that's coming our way, that that's going to get much, much easier to be able to have more personalized, you know, the right message to the right consumer at the right time, effectively.
Sounds like personalization 101. It's really interesting because I feel a barrier is tech. I feel as though maybe like an excuse because what you're talking about, if I'm honest, Richard, sounds a lot like just bringing things back to basics, speaking 100%. To your customers, going back into the score, having a relationship, a human interaction with someone. And that's hard to do in an online environment. And tech is designed to facilitate those kind of conversations. I don't know whether sometimes we see it as a bit of an excuse to say, in lieu of doing this, which feels really hard and sociable, and as me, a millennial, I don't want to do that, I'm going to use a piece of tech that might help me or might make that relationship a bit easier. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, so, I think about what we mentioned there, kind of, you know, either if you're just sort of sitting in the CMS, or it's difficult to produce have the capability from the technology, or the tech is kind of that that barrier, isn't there? You're right. But I mean, some of the things we've done or advised our sort of founders or sort of e-com leaders to do is actually, you know, finding, I suppose, the right communication method, but actually reaching out to those top customers. You know, we've had some brilliant success and insight come from getting founders, owners, and sort of team members to talk to their customers directly. Sometimes the phone can be, you say, for millennials and Gen Z may not be the best place to, but maybe the initial WhatsApp, hey, I'm the founder from this brand that you bought quite regularly from. I'd love to be able to, could we have a chat? Could we have a Zoom, or, you know, open up and learning around, you know, what they do, where they found the brand, what they like, and then extending that not only out into the best customers, but new customers as well. You know, looking at, right, you know, had hopefully maybe hundreds of new customers yesterday, randomly picking 10 and dropping them a message to say, hey, I'm, you know, a founder or a senior manager at this business, purchased yesterday, could have a chat. And most people will say, yes, you know, they'll spare you 5 minutes, right? And you can, the amount of insight you can gain from that's phenomenal. So we've set up quite a few when we've been engaged to help on set up sort of CRM flows and automations in businesses. We'll set up a trigger that drops, you know, a number of customers into an inbox for one of the team to say, right, contact these customers.
That's nice.
Today. Yeah, it's really good.
I feel as though I could speak to you for another 30 minutes with 3-year-old banging outside the door, asking for Lego. So just some parting words, I suppose, Richard, what would be the one thing that you would encourage people to act like a physical retailer? How would you encourage people?
Well, I think perhaps, I would say act like, Steve Quayle at Homebase circa 1995, when I was there as a teenager, walk the store, properly get in. And actually, when you say start from the other side of the car park, so go and find one of your ads. I know it's difficult to click on it because it might cost you 30p or maybe a bit more, but follow the flow that a customer does, and, you know, proper shop, you know, mystery shop the site and critique it, and don't live in the back end of the e-com management tool all day. Get shopping.
I love that. Richard, thank you very much. Cool. People can find you on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah. Just Richard Chappell on LinkedIn, or you can find us at thegrowth.foundation.
Lovely. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. Take care.
There we have it. Thank you so much for listening. Please do like, subscribe, and share on whatever platform it is that you're listening to on today. This show comes from the team behind Made With Intent, the customer intent platform for retailers. If you are, of course, interested in being more profitable whilst being more personal, then please feel free to check us out at madewithintent.ai. Thanks again for listening and joining us on our mission to change how e-commerce sees, measures, and treats their customers. I've been your host, David Mannheim. Have a great day.